It's up!
Turks, Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparyan with you guys. So amazing guest for you guys today. Wasni Lambre is going to come on and talk about Haiti. We need to talk about that. It's unfortunately a disaster over there. And Don Lemon is going to come and talk about Elon Musk, a different form of a disaster. But a lot of things on tonight's show might surprise you. I've got a defense of Donald Trump coming up. I got a defense of Chuck Schumer's rabbi. And I've got a defense of a little bit of Elon Musk in that Don Lemon interview.
What?
What is this?
Hold on. I'm getting word in my ear. Don Lemon has canceled the interview. I'm just kidding.
Interview canceled. No, Don didn't do that and he wouldn't do that. So we're gonna talk to him later tonight. So share the stream with everybody. Let's get word out there. This is gonna be a great show. Casper.
Well, we begin with one of the most dishonest stories in the news right now in regard to Donald Trump. So without further ado, let's get to it.
If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's gonna be a bloodbath for the whole, that's gonna be the least of it. It's gonna be a bloodbath for the country.
That statement sounds pretty bad. Trump made it during a rally speech in Ohio over the weekend. And if you were to just hear that portion of his statement, you would assume that he was calling for a bloodbath should he fail to get elected in 2024, the general election. Well, the media, unfortunately, with the help of the Democratic Party, has actually done a fine job completely taking Trump's speech at this Ohio rally out of context to make it seem like he said something that he didn't actually say. And the bloodbath narrative that's playing out in the media is not only dishonest, after the full context was made apparent to the Trump critics, they doubled down on making it appear as though he was calling for violence in the country. Now here's the fuller context and then we'll discuss what we think about it. Let's watch.
Mexico has taken over a period of 30 years 34% of the automobile manufacturing business in our country. Think of it, went to Mexico. China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're gonna build the cars in Mexico and they think that they're gonna sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're gonna get that, you're gonna not hire Americans, and you're gonna sell the cars to us. No, we're gonna put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not gonna be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's gonna be a bloodbath for the whole, that's gonna be the least of it. It's gonna be a bloodbath.
So presenting Trump's statement as one in which he's calling for a bloodbath if he fails to get elected is incredibly dishonest. And Cenk, I mean, I've saw this all over the media over the weekend. There was a lot of backlash to the media because of their dishonest framing and the fact that they took him out of context. And then a lot of people in the media continue to double down, including Joe Scarborough, which we'll get to in just a moment. But I'm curious what you think. Or am I being too fair to Trump here?
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, I covered this speech right after it happened, which you should always check out on youtube.com/theyoungturks. And what I said was, no, he was meant it in an economic sense. Now he said a ton of absurd things in that speech as he always does. Has he called for violence in the past? I think he has. I think, and he celebrated it when it's come. But in this particular case, he was clearly talking about tariffs. He said it in an economic context. Not guilty. Now, should Trump be more careful given that people caused the riot at the Capitol because of him and he didn't really stop them and they wanted to murder his vice president and he kind of and he told his chief of staff that he didn't mind. Yeah, given that context, given the history of Donald Trump, he should be a lot more careful about calling for bloodbath if he doesn't win. Now, having said that, a ton of people say bloodbath in an economic sense. Oh, the stock market, had a bloodbath today with all the selling, etc., etc. So, no, in that context, it was not a call for violence. And I think that the media kind of clowns itself.
Totally.
When they take things out of context like this and are unfair to him, when he said a million horrible things, you don't need to stretch to make this case against him. I think it ruins your credibility, to be honest.
Not only does it ruin the credibility of the press that dishonestly frames Trump in this way, in the future, when they make claims that are grounded in reality and have merit, people will not trust the media. So when you have pundits asking themselves, oh, where did these QAnon people come from? Where did all these conspiracy theorists come from? How come they don't trust in our institutions? Why don't they believe the journalists? Why do they think the journalists are elitist? This is why, this is exactly why. They have done a great job discrediting themselves when in reality, just report the facts. Report what he said in context and don't make it seem as though he's calling for a bloodbath in the country if he fails to get elected in November. Now, with that said, I wanted to just note, you mentioned how bloodbath is used all the time in an economic sense. Just last week, we covered the story about the, changes at the RNC and how Lara Trump, who is his daughter-in-law, is now the co-chair of the RNC, and they fired about 60 people. And you want to know what the press referred to that as? A bloodbath.
That's it, they're calling for violence. Okay, guys. That's exactly what we're talking about. And we've now shown you a couple instances. I know it's anecdotal, but I'm seeing it online as well. You take it with a grain of salt if you like. But a bunch of MAGA guys that we interview go, well, on the left, there's one set of people that I sometimes trust. It's Young Turks. And then mainstream media sees that and goes, aha, you guys are guilty. No, guys, I've said meaner things about Donald Trump than almost anyone in American media. So you can go look at tens of thousands of videos. But I never misquote him. I don't take him out of context. And that's why people trust me more. So when I don't kiss the ass of the establishment. And this guy's, let's be honest, there's one other layer here we're not talking about, which is that the Biden team wants to put this out as, okay, here he goes with a call for violence. And when you see the media copying almost word for word what the Biden political team is putting out, that's how you lose credibility, okay? So stick to the terrible things he does say, not to the things he didn't say or didn't mean. He's off prompter there, he's got verbal diarrhea.
Oh yeah.
And look, he did say an outrageous thing there. I know in the context of Donald Trump, it doesn't sound so outrageous, but 100% tariff is mental. It's totally insane, right?
It totally takes away from the legitimate thing you can critique him on, right?
Right.
And it's just, again, I would rather oppose Trump for who he really is, as opposed to not liking Trump based on a fantasy that's been made up and manufactured by the Democratic Party or the press. I mean, he's a target-rich environment, don't make things up. All it does is lead to distrust toward the press, toward the media, toward journalists, and it's ridiculous. And by the way, I don't blame Biden and the Biden campaign for wanting to really emphasize this and take Trump out of context and get the media to rile up people into thinking that he would call for violence if he doesn't get elected. I mean, it's a good distraction from the real bloodbath that's taking place in Gaza right now, something that's been greenlit, supported, and funded by our president, Joe Biden. With that said, let's go to Joe Scarborough, who had a proper meltdown this morning, even after the full context of the situation was revealed.
He's talking about a bloodbath for America. It's laid out in the terms of it. And these idiots on Twitter, these idiots on cable news, these idiots on Sunday shows, going, well, our presidents, he was talking only about the auto industry, and this is one more. It's just, let me say that at 6:15 a.m. It's just, he knew what he was doing. We're not stupid. Americans aren't stupid. He was talking about a bloodbath. Sometimes a bloodbath means a bloodbath. And when he finishes by saying, and that's just going to be the least of it, seriously, these people may be stupid. We're not.
There really is something rich about Joe Scarborough calling everyone else stupid as he continues to push a completely manufactured and fake narrative about what Trump said during that speech.
Yeah, and you made a great point there, Anna, that I hadn't even thought of. Mainstream media, Biden team, their advocates, etc., have called for bloodbath after bloodbath. The Iraq war, what Israel's doing in Gaza now. The one thing they criticized Biden on was how dare you withdraw from Afghanistan. So they've advocated for endless bloodbaths. In real life that we committed, thanks to people like Joe Scarborough, he was completely in favor of the Iraq war. 1 million people died in that war. Okay, so now you're gonna talk about an out of context economic quote. And again, it's, you wanna talk about stupid. When MAGA guys, or more important, way more importantly, when independents see you misquoting him in this particular context, you lose credibility that they don't believe you on the 9 other things he actually did say. So, okay, have at it, Hoss. And I know that your demographic of like super Biden lovers on MSNBC, the 98-year-old voters, sorry, but their average age on MSNBC viewers is about 70 years old, okay? So those people are like, yes, we hate Trump so much, Biden's the best. Tell us more things we wanna hear, Joe. Tell us more things we wanna hear. No, in the real world, you lose complete credibility doing nonsense like this. So, and you think that Trump meant that strategically? Come on, Joe Scarborough. You know Trump isn't bright enough that he planned an extemporaneous, like 10, 15 second little thing in the middle of his talk about tariffs. He didn't plan that. He can't stop himself.
There was other portions of his speech that were reported on that I thought, well, this sounds really, really bad. There were allegations that he referenced migrants and said that they're not human. So I was like, why isn't the press more focused on that statement as opposed to the bloodbath statement? So then I went and watched the entirety of the speech just to make sure that I got the full context of that statement. Now remember, the press is presenting it as Trump calling all migrants not human. Is that really what he said? Let's watch.
If I had prisons that were teeming with MS-13 and all sorts of people that they've got to take care of for the next 50 years, right? Young people, they're in jail for years. If you call them people, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion. But I'm not allowed to say that because the radical left says that's a terrible thing to say. They say you have to vote against him because did you hear what he said about humanity? I've seen the humanity, and these humanity, these are bad. These are animals, okay? And we have to stop it. We can't have another Lakin.
So in the end there, he mentions Lakin. He's referring to Lakin Riley, a Georgia college student who was killed. The suspect is an undocumented immigrant from Venezuela. And yes, the right wing has really like latched onto that story to do their own campaigning and yes, fear mongering to some extent about migrants. Now look, you can say that Trump specifically referring to MS-13 gang members and murderers like the person who murdered Lakin Riley is meant to paint a picture of migrants in general, and you can be critical of that. But he very clearly was not saying that all migrants are not human.
Yeah, no, look guys. So when he first started talking about people coming over the border being rapists and criminals, he did not qualify it with MS-13 or gangs. And it was an outrageous thing to say. When he asked his administration, can they put razor wire and shoot people coming across the border in the leg and put in alligators as things, he did not qualify it. He has said perfectly vicious and horrible and dehumanizing things about immigrants. So you don't need to make things up. In this context, he was clearly talking about MS-13. Now, again, you could say, hey, you shouldn't talk about any person that way. Okay, that's fair. But don't pretend that he was talking about all immigrants here in the one of the few cases where he wasn't. So, like, being unfair doesn't help you at all. So look, there is one legitimate critique, and Scarborough touched on it for a second. If he had stayed on that, I would have had a different opinion. And one of our members pointed it out, Boomer Dragon Cat, actually a couple of them did. Whole bunch agree with us, thank you, I'll read that during the break. Watch the live show, you'll get so much more. Anyway, I disagree, Jenk and Anna, Boomer Dragon Cat said. He said the auto industry would be the least of it. His bloodbath statement meant what was going to happen to the country. Love you though, love you back. So in that case, I do disagree with you. I don't think he meant it for the whole country. But the good point is, when he said that'll be the least of it, that was my only concern. And I pointed that out in the live video I made right after the speech. Don't say the least of it. What do you mean the least of it, right? So we're not trying to minimize the things that he has said and the things that he, you know, warns about. Oh, you better elect me, otherwise there's gonna be trouble. He said that before, right? Don't stretch, don't be unfair for no reason when he gives you 1,000 things for fodder to legitimately criticize him on.
So in the middle of an economic rant, when he says, and that'll be the least of it, we're going to assume that he's referring to-
No, I'm not assuming, Anna, but yeah. I can see how people would think, hey, maybe he doesn't mean economic when he says it'll be the least of it. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's okay, guys, you just now heard it all in context. So you can make your own decision on what he meant.
Yeah, so the final thing that I wanted to just draw attention to was, I think, the worst and also cheesiest part of his rally speeches, which typically begin like this.
It began, as many Trump rallies do these days, with a song by the so-called January 6th
Ladies
prison choir.
Please rise for the horribly and unfairly treated January 6th hostages.
Made up of those serving time for storming the Capitol. Trump framing them as hostages, patriots.
You see the spirit from the hostages, and that's what they are, as hostages. The first day we get into office, we're going to save our country, and we're going to work with the people to treat those unbelievable patriots.
Okay, so I have mixed emotions about this. Number one, no, people who broke the law on January 6th and broke into the Capitol absolutely should be, you know, tried, and if they're found guilty, convicted of the crimes they committed. They are not hostages. But the reason why I say I have mixed emotions is because how do you not laugh when you hear that cheesy ass guy talk the way that he did as he was introducing Trump? Like, oh, hostages, hostages. Like,
yeah, it's because Trump's events are like a WWE rally, an event. And that's why I explained this a long time ago. While they'll threaten to kill Jim Acosta, a CNN anchor, who by the way also is taking this bloodbath comment out of context, but has been personally, you know, threatened, etc. And then they'll want to take pictures with him and get his autograph. So why? Because they view him as a heel, like you do in wrestling.
Yes.
Oh, he's one of the villains and Trump is one of the good guys. And that's why they have like, are you ready to rumble before the speech? Because they're doing it as a form of entertainment. But that doesn't excuse that absurd, you know,
statements?
Framing of them as hostages. Oh, those poor guys, they were just trying to bash the cops' heads in as they were going to murder the vice president. Oh, poor them, what patriots there. They were chanting, hang Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence. They were going to murder the vice president. They're not the victims. But remember, Trump and his administration folks were 10,000 times more guilty. They egged them on, they encouraged them, they didn't stop them. And they're the ones who did the coup plot with the fake electors. Mm-hmm. So Trump is the biggest target-rich environment in politics you will ever see. Needlessly making things up about him is the world's worst political strategy. But the Democrats and mainstream media just can't help themselves. And that's part of the problem.
All right, we gotta take a break. When we come back, Wasni Lambre joins us for a discussion about what's happening on the ground in Haiti. He's done excellent coverage in the past, providing some historical context about why Haiti is in the situation it's in today. So we're gonna cover that story and more when we come back. Don't miss it.
Mikey, Cenk, and Anna with you guys. Anthony McClendon wrote in on Super Chat. That's it, Anna and Cenk. You listen to Trump's words and accurately describe them. You're officially right-wingers now.
Okay.
No, he's kidding.
No,
he's
I know. But okay. I'm sure that critique is in there somewhere.
Yeah, we'll do that later. But anyway, Jason Alea, thank you for gifting 5 Young Turks memberships. We appreciate you. And thank you to iPrevolt for joining on tyt.com/join. You guys are the best. Anna.
Well, I wanted to cover some international news, beginning with what's transpiring in Haiti. So let's get right to it. A crisis had already been unfolding in Haiti before criminal gangs took over the country in recent weeks. The country hasn't had an elected government for over a year. Its 43rd president, Jovenel Moïse, was assassinated on July 7th of 2021, and they hadn't elected a new president since then. And now, as I mentioned earlier, criminal gangs have taken over the country. And about a week ago, the prime minister of Haiti, Ariel Henry, stepped down with the hopes that it would squash the violence or at least calm down some of the violence that's being carried out by these gangs. Unfortunately, that has not been the case.
Extortion and kidnappings have become a common trade to finance the gangs. Since the assassination of the Haitian president in 2021, the country has been plunged even further into political chaos and insecurity. 80% of the capital today is controlled by criminal groups. Haitian police officers attempt to regain control of parts of the city. In a bullet-riddled tank, this elite unit gears up for a face-off with a gang, making their way through Mariani, a neighborhood west of Port-au-Prince.
The residents here are desperate. The area has been occupied for some time by armed men, civilians. We're here to put them out of their misery.
Now, unfortunately, gang violence has been a bit of a mainstay in Haiti, but things really exploded while the prime minister was in Kenya. Now, hunger has already set in for Haitians who were already living in poverty, and fears of famine are growing in the failed state. 300,000 Haitians have been displaced from their homes, and half of those individuals happen to be children. The United States is also attempting to evacuate Americans from Haiti and managed to bring about 30 people home on chartered flights today. But getting to the airport has become nearly impossible for Americans who are stranded in Haiti because the gangs are blocking the roads. Here's more on that.
The situation for ordinary people remains dangerous, with police in the capital, Port-au-Prince, currently trying to arrest gang leader Jimmy Chérizier, known as Barbecue. Last week, the escalating violence forced the resignation of the Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, who had been out of the country trying to organize the deployment of an international security force to stabilize the country.
On Friday, the police was trying to access one of their bases for their specialized police units. And then you got it into a shootout with some of the gangs. And this continued into yesterday. This is a stronghold there. We're also hearing that private homes were also looted. We know that the gangs went back and attacked the seaport again. UNICEF is saying that they had a number of containers that have been looted. People have not been able to leave the capital because all roads outside of the capital are blocked by gangs. So this will benefit individuals who are in the north of the country, who are not in the capital, but the ones who really need to get out are those that are in Port-au-Prince. And we do not know how that is going to happen.
Now, in response to all of this violence, bloodshed, and suffering, apparently Caribbean leaders are forming the creation of a transitional government. It was supposed to have 7 members with voting powers, but one political party in Haiti rejected the seat that they were offered, and another is still apparently squabbling, according to the Associated Press, over who should be nominated. And meanwhile, the development of a UN-backed Kenyan police force to fight these gangs in Haiti has been delayed. played with the East African country saying that it would wait until the transitional council is established. So how did we get here? Because obviously this didn't just come out of nowhere. This didn't just start a few weeks ago. This has been an ongoing issue. Haiti has dealt with a lot of historical events that got us to the place that we're in now. And luckily, to help us figure this all out is Wasni Lambre, obviously a friend and contributor to TYT and also from The Ringer. Waz, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Happy to be on with you guys.
So I've heard you cover Haiti on your podcasts, you know, Woke Bros, or on other shows many, many times. And you always come correct with like this historical context that I think is important in understanding how we got to where we are today. So why don't we start with that? Talk a little bit about, you know, Europeans colonizing, you know, Haiti, the United States' role in what is transpiring in Haiti. I think it's all really relevant to help understand what's happening.
I mean, some people would say pretty much ever since the founding of the state, when Jean-Jacques Dessalines declared Haiti an independent state after they defeated the French in the Haitian Revolution. Pretty soon after that, he tried to redistribute the land amongst the peasants, and the Haitian elite conspired to have the guy assassinated, and they brought their Western betters back into the country. And that's basically been the lay of the land ever since. And, you know, at different times it's France, at different times it's been the US, at different times it's been the Clinton Foundation. But there's always been this influence from the Western powers within the islands, and it's always been in collaboration with the Haitian elites. Believe it or not, yes, Haiti is what they call the poorest country within the Western hemisphere, but the Haitian oligarchs enjoy incredible amounts of wealth. We're talking about people who live in the mountains and have helipads on their freaking properties, right? And so they've always been the collaborators with their Western betters. And I think the situation on the ground right now is no different. For whatever reason, the Haitian elite decided that they didn't like what Moïse was doing, the former president who was assassinated, and they got him out of there. And it's hard for somebody like me to believe that they didn't do this with the tacit approval of the US State Department, because as you guys well know, nothing happens in our backyard without the State Department's approval. If you do things that they don't like, they will come and coup your behind. I will remind people back in 2004, the CIA backed a coup against President Aristide because, I mean, some people would say it's because he tried to raise the minimum wage in the freaking sweatshops from 25 cents to a dollar. Again, this is well documented. The CIA in America backed that coup. They've been destabilizing this country for decades, if not centuries, right? And so the current situation right now is just a manifestation of those realities.
Yeah, so I've read a little bit about the slave revolt that happened in Haiti that took over the country, and I think it's amazing, fascinating, and has had so many repercussions and reverberations, including basically it made America. And the reason is because it bankrupted the French that were speculating on the slave trade, and then they had to do the Louisiana Purchase for a song, and that allowed America to expand to the West. So it's just an amazing story overall. Now, having said that, now let's speed up to today. So I'm looking for good guys here, Waz, and I don't know if there are any. Okay.
No. So there are no good guys. There are the Haitian peasants who are basically getting grounded into freaking dust by this ruling elite and the Western powers. And then there's everybody else who is basically angling for power, right? I mean, some people, you know, there are media outlets in Haiti that would call this guy Jimmy Barbecue Chalizier, some type of revolutionary figure. For those of the viewers who don't know, this guy's a former cop. So he's a former agent of the state. And they basically backdoored this guy. They pinned an atrocity on him, and he's been waging war against the elites ever since. And, you know, I won't lie, if you actually listen to some of his rhetoric, it's got some pretty socialist this like bent to it, like revolutionary bent, where he's talking about, hey, these elites, these five families basically own the entire island. They hoard all the wealth, all of the resources, all of the aid. They've privatized everything into just freaking oblivion. And so the state, there is no state, there's no income. The last president before he got assassinated was in the process of privatizing the electric company and the ports. Those were basically the last two state sort of properties, and they privatized that, which means what? It just means so that some private actors can now profit off of it, and the state can't produce any sort of goods or services for its people. And by the way, this is the policy of our Western powers. This is neoliberalism realized to its furthest extent. Absolutely no state, a hollowed out state, and just private actors profiting hand over fist at every single turn.
One thing that I was surprised to learn about as I was researching this story is the widespread use of criminal gangs by business interests and politicians in Haiti. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think what people need to understand, I guess in the media they call these guys gangs, but they should really be thinking of them more as paramilitary groups. These people come from the Haitian slums. Where the hell are they getting the money, the wherewithal to procure freaking AK-47s and all kind of guns and ammunition and assault weapons? Obviously, they're backed by people with actual financial means. And so for a long time, you know, the different political elite factions and the business elite, they've hired out people in the slums to, you know, essentially do their dirty work during elections. You know, when they have to travel around the country, they've hired these people as a private security force. And, you know, of course, this thing has no governance. There's no oversight. These same people go around terrorizing the citizenry. And how you know, guys, that these people are empowered and employed by the Haitian elite is that everybody knows where the elite live. They know how they live. They know where they stay. Yet all of the gang activity is happening in the poorest parts of the capital city. It doesn't take criminology, you know, 401 level to realize if you want to make some bread, you go where it's at, right? And so that's all you need to know about all of these gangs. They're all backed by the Haitian elite. Different factions of that elite, I should say.
Yeah, so Waz, when Israel was attacked on October 7th, they thought they were in peril. 5 months later, they still think they're in peril. So the Biden administration and Congress is trying to rush them $14 or $17 billion. So are they trying to get $14 billion to Haiti right now? $24 billion?
Here's the thing too about aid in a place like Haiti. Because there's no government, because there is no state, there's no established order, right? There's no organizing principle of the land besides these, you know, this gilded gentry class of people who own every single resource within the company. What would $14 billion in US aid even do over there, Cenk? Right. Who would they give it to? Who would be in charge of disseminating these goods? Like, there's no state to speak of, right? And so, yeah, obviously it's nasty what the state does when they hand billions upon billions of dollars to weapons manufacturers. Again, by the way, private companies, private actors, y'all, these are privately owned companies that get government checks to send weapons abroad, aka we fatten the hell out of their bottom line so they can send weapons abroad. You can't really use that same logic. And also, the things that are happening on the ground in Haiti are happening because of US policy. I don't think anybody in the State Department is like, oh, our agenda won't be able to be carried out because the Haitian citizens are suffering. In fact, when they want to carry out this exploitative sort of way of retracting the cheap labor from the country, it's even better for those purposes, right? And so why would they go against an order that they've established themselves and that they themselves benefit from?
Yeah, so was. Of course, I'm kidding about the $14 billion. And you know, if we had intended to help Haiti, there was 100 different ways we could have done it in the past. And of course, we didn't choose to do that for the reasons that you're explaining here. And defense contractors don't have any money to make, etc. But my last question is, if there we were good guys and we wanted to help Haiti as in America, right? Is there anything we could do, given that you know you helping the paramilitary groups doesn't seem like a good idea? The government's a mess. So is there any way that America could help if it wanted to?
I think what Haiti needs right now is a vast sort of infrastructural undertaking. If America wanted to be a great ally and partner, they would invest very heavily in building up the actual infrastructure of the company. You know, sewage, roads, we're talking about the basics here, an electrical grid. That would be the nicest thing the West could do, would actually go about building up a place so that this could be a livable place for the masses of poor and impoverished Haitians. And I will repeat this. The people who actually own the island live like kings and queens. Mm-hmm. And they do that by exploiting the peasantry. How America, which again, they would never do, would be investment in on an infrastructural level. And then of course, you know, letting these people, allowing these people to build up a state, build up a way to, you know, fund goods and services for its people. That would be the ultimate goal of a benevolent, you know, West. But I mean, that seems like a long shot at this point.
Yeah, especially when you consider that, you know, the US did to Haiti what it did to many Latin American countries in backing a dictatorial regime back in the 1950s, 1957 with Francois Duvalier. So look, it'd be amazing if the US actually changed gears for once and did something positive on behalf of Haiti. I'm not gonna hold my breath though. Now Waz, we're out of time, but thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. Hopefully you'll come back because this isn't a story that's gonna go away anytime soon. Thank you again. And everyone go check out Waz over at The Ringer. And again, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we've got more news for you all, including apparently Donald Trump too broke to pay his bond in the financial fraud case. We've got that story and more. Don't miss it.
Back on TYT, Cenk, Anna, Neurodivergent Dragon, and Samuel Sherrell. So you guys are awesome. Thanks for joining. They hit the join button below and you could upgrade through that too. We need it. And Anthony McClinton gifted 5 and David Bergen gifted 5 Young Turks memberships as well. You guys are the best. Casper.
We've got an update on Donald Trump's legal woes, and this one is a doozy.
Judge Engoron says that he wants this $350 million within 30 days. Now, I know that you're planning on appealing this, but you've still got to put up the full amount pending that appeal. Does Donald Trump have that kind of money sitting around?
Yes. I mean, he does. Of course, he has money. You know, he's a billionaire. We know that.
Well, contrary to what Trump attorney Alina Haba stated there, it seems like Trump will be unable to make his $464 million bond in his New York civil fraud case. And that's not for lack of trying. So in a court filing, Trump's lawyers wrote, defendants' ongoing diligent efforts have proven that a bond in the judgment's full amount is a practical impossibility. These diligent efforts have included approaching about 30 surety companies through 4 separate brokers. So Cenk, I'm gonna bring you in as the fancy guy with the fancy Columbia law degree. What does surety mean?
Okay, not a big deal. Okay, look, let me explain it more broadly. So If he can't put up the bond, why is he trying so hard to put this bond up? And he did in the E. Jean Carroll case as well, because he never listens to the law, he never follows anything. There's a very good reason why. Because if you don't put up that kind of money, then the Letitia James can start selling your properties. Now, if she starts selling the properties, he's in a world of trouble for a great number of reasons. Number one, he's not gonna have a source of income anymore. Number two, they might have to do distress sales, which will bring you less value than if you sold at your peak. So there's a great number of reasons why he's in a cold sweat panic here. And again, I might surprise you guys a little bit here. I think that he has an interesting case in terms of waiting till appeal to do that last drastic step. But for sure, and then I'll get into my commentary about the lawyer, etc. He was never a billionaire, and now you're finding out, yeah, he doesn't have the money for sure.
I think I'm ready for you all to hate me, because I'm gonna say something that will make you hate me. I think this all goes way too far. Mm-hmm. Way, 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 way too far, okay? Guys, look, it was a civil case. Yes, he lied about the value of his assets, and there should be punishment for that, because we would all have to face punishment if we lied to the banks about the value of our assets in order to, you know, secure loans or insurance. That's what he did here. Don't you think this goes a little too far? Like, he paid all of those banks back.
No, it depends. Look, so I'm not positive about the amount, because I'm not the judge in the case, and I didn't see all the data that they went through. But I want to tell you what that was, so that you get a sense of the context.
Okay, there, okay? Go ahead.
So if you just said randomly, hey, give me $400 million because I didn't like the fraud that you committed, etc. Yeah, that's a giant number. And I would say that goes way too far, right?
You have to prove damages though, don't you?
Yes, they did. So
what are the damages?
Yeah, here's the damages. So number one, when you apply for a loan, you're gonna get, based on your collateral and based on what you've stated, you're gonna get different interest rates. And so whether you take the loan and you pay it back is not the only material thing. So if an interest rate is 14%, which is super high, as it was for Trump when he bought the Taj Mahal in Atlantic City, you're much more likely to run into trouble, go bankrupt, etc. But the lender is more likely to make money because he's charging a 14% interest rate.
Okay.
So if you charge a 2% interest rate, you get it, right? And so they did the math during the trial on how much he saved by lying about his properties and hence his collateral. So that's the money, extra money that he cost the banks, because even if they gave him the loan, they would have charged a higher interest rate and it would have equaled this much. Now Trump lies so often, commits so much fraud that he's made 50 million here, 30 million there, 400 million there from all these different frauds that he's run. And you can tell, and they proved, hey, here's what he said was the value of the property in one instance, here's what he said in another instance, and it doesn't match at all, and here's the real value of the property. So they did real homework and real adjudication of this case.
So the problem is, or let me reframe that, the damages that were proven were the damages in that the banks didn't make more money off of him through a higher interest that they could have charged him if he was more honest about the value of his assets.
Yeah, that's a fair way of putting it.
Okay, I just want to also note for the record that while we got this massive judgment in a civil case pertaining to the poor, poor banks and the damages that they have suffered, the American people have still not received any of the money that they're owed as a result of the damages that Trump caused by skirting his taxes.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a great
point. No rush when it comes to that. When it comes to skirting your tax liabilities and responsibilities, which hurts the American people, of course. No rush in a judgment for that. But the poor banks.
But by the way, that you're not wrong that that's part of the reason why he's facing such stiff penalties here. Because like we've said many times, who's the one guy who went to jail among the rich? Bernie Madoff. What was his crime? Robbing other rich people. Actually, there was a second guy, it was a Goldman Sachs executive, because he was robbing other Goldman Sachs executives, right? So that's the only crime in America that you'll get punished for in terms of white collar crime. Okay, and I'll expand on what you're saying. Mm-hmm. We did a backdoor bailout of AIG and Goldman Sachs during 2008. We printed trillions of dollars, gave it to the bankers, etc. Now, normally when you bail out a company in a private context, in capitalism, you get the returns once you bail them out. You own either a giant chunk of it or the entirety of it. The American taxpayers bailed out all those banks, all those insurance companies, etc. We should have, you know how much we're owed? We're owed trillions and trillions of dollars for those bailouts. We're never going to get that. No one's ever going to mention that, etc. So all those things are true. But nevertheless, in this particular case, they were correct about Trump. He did commit fraud. It did cost this much. And they added more money because of the back interest that he owes that on the money he would have had to pay back then, etc. And if Trump didn't like it, then he shouldn't have committed massive fraud. And by the way, I don't shed any tears for him, because this is only one case. In reality, he committed this kind of fraud dozens of times in his career and got away with it every single time, because back then he was part of the elites and you never get prosecuted if you're part of the elites. Now that he's a little anti-establishment, all of a sudden a prosecution. So we're super fair. If you're MAGA and you're like, oh, I bet he wouldn't have been prosecuted if it wasn't for politics. Probably.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Because
with
he
that
was
case.
Super rich. Yeah, and they always let the super rich get away with it.
By the way, I think that this case, I mean, I actually see it as a good thing. This case is going to open the floodgates, because now a precedent has been set where a politically motivated civil suit has led to Trump having to pay this massive amount of money, right? And he might not have the money and it might lead to a complete financial disaster for him. And we'll get to those details in just a second. But you think Republicans aren't gonna turn around and try Democrats that they are alleging of, blowing up their assets or the value of their assets to something that's unrealistic and not based on any merit?
Well, so that, I mean, look. So there's two ways that can go, and one is absolutely disastrous and the other is actually kind of fantastic. So if Trump gets into office and does what he's threatening to do, and he did it again today, he said Cassidy Hutchinson, who used to work in his administration, he said she should be arrested and put in jail.
Come
why? Because she testified against him and said things that were true.
She's such a clown.
Right, so if he goes in that direction where he starts putting people in jail for disagree with him politically, he's a monster, a dictator, etc. It'll be the worst thing that ever happened. But if they instead they don't do that and they go, oh yeah, okay, let's look at all the Democrats and all their connected buddies and how many times they committed fraud and they pursue them through civil proceedings and then get that money back to the American taxpayer. A, that would be fantastic. B, it would make them populist heroes and make him incredibly popular,
true.
Right?
Yep.
But Trump's not gonna do that. He does, and part of the reason is he is among the elites. He loves those other rich guys and he wants their money and he wants their support. So he's gonna try to put his political opponents in jail unjustly, and he's not gonna pursue them through the courts like this. But if he did, he wouldn't be wrong. I would love to have both Democrats, Republicans, whoever actually committed fraud to be prosecuted as Trump was here.
So,
or tried.
Going back to his inability to pay that massive $464 million bond, keep in mind that in a deposition just last year, Trump testified that he had $400 million in cash. It appears that that is not necessarily the case. The lawyers also noted that bond companies typically require collateral of approximately 120% of the amount of the judgment, which would total about $557 million. That's a lot of money. In addition, sureties would likely charge bond premiums of approximately 2% per year with 2 years in advance, an upfront cost of over $18 million, the filing said. The $18 million also would not be recoverable even if Trump wins his appeal. However, Trump's lawyers insist that Trump's real estate holdings actually exceed the amount that he needs to pay. But to your point, Cenk, he doesn't want to sell those properties, right? And even if he were to be in favor of selling those properties, it's not as easy as selling a single family residential home in a super, super limited inventory housing market. We're talking about complicated real estate holdings that would require very complicated sales. The bond companies don't accept Trump's hard assets, such as real estate, as collateral. right? So that wouldn't work as collateral if he's planning on doing that. So Trump has asked the New York appellate court to waive the bond requirement while he appeals the judgment, arguing that paying now would cause him irreparable harm. If the court turns down his request and he is unable to obtain a bond, New York Attorney General Letitia James, who sued Trump in 2022, could begin enforcing the judgment at the beginning of next week. And she has previously stated that she will look to seize Trump's assets if he cannot come up with the money himself.
Yeah, so look, the lawyer in the beginning saying yes, he's a billionaire, yes, he has the cash is so counterproductive. Trump saying he has the $400 million in cash is so counterproductive to their legal claims. Why do they do it? Because Trump's whole image is built on, I'm super rich, I'm so successful, I'm such a great businessman. So he doesn't want to admit that he's a failure and he doesn't have this kind of money, and he never has. He's been lying the entire time. But in terms of what's right and fair, we can't have one set of rules for Trump and another set of rules for everyone else. And to me, putting up all the cash up front before you appeal the case seems draconian for everyone, not just Trump, right? And it's white collar crime. Look, I want it punished maximum. And if he loses the appeal, damn right, sell all your properties and pay up, okay? But what if he wins the appeal? So you made him sell all of his properties to get the collateral, but then he can't buy them back. And if he had to sell them in a fire sale, so when his lawyer says irreparable harm, in this case, financially speaking, it would be irreparable harm. So I think that the system should allow for using collateral, but not Trump's inflated nonsense numbers, but actual judgment of what those properties are worth.
Agreed.
And then if he loses the appeal, they take the properties. But if he doesn't lose the appeal, he gets the properties back. And that's fair, making him sell all of it up front before the appeal is decided. It is the law, but it doesn't seem quite fair.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Don Lemon will be joining us to talk about his new show and his bit of a tiff with Elon Musk. Don't miss it.